Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN. Powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken Edwards with the NCL. Sitting to my right, Ed Maher with the NCL. Good morning.
Good morning, Ken.
How are you?
I'm great.
Good. No Phil today. Phil is, I think he's in St. Louis.
I'm not sure where he is, but he made an OnlyFans joke about me on Worker Wednesday.
Well, we're going to get to that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take it easy on Phil.
Yeah, I don't know that it was a joke.
It was a joke.
No.
I know it was a joke.
So, listen, before we start the show, I'm going to give a quick, like, sort of PSA? Is that what they call it? Public service announcement?
Yeah.
So, we, right now, the National Coalition of Labor is in the throes of open enrollment for both our life insurance, accident, critical illness, things like that, and also our short-term disability.
Yeah.
All right. And so, if you need it, now's the time to get it. It's supplemental. It's over and above whatever you get through the coalition, whatever you get through your union. It's tax-free, and it goes until the end of January.
Right.
So October 1 through the end of January, that's the time for open enrollment.
And it's no questions asked for life insurance.
Yeah.
For construction workers.
So there's no questions asked, right? There's no medical exams. And the only caveat is... you need to be available for work, not even actively working, right? You could be sitting on the bench,
yeah,
on
the layoff, list or whatever.
Right, on the out-of-work list, as long as you haven't pulled your pension yet.
Not on disability.
Or not on disability, or have, like, literally you are available to work. As long as that's the case, you are eligible to buy it. It starts, let's say you bought it, you know, this week, for example. It will start... January 1st.
Yeah.
First. Had you bought it month. In early October, it would have started December 1st, et cetera. But it's usually about January 1 or December 1. December 1 has come and gone. So if you buy it now, it will be effective January 1. If you were to buy it today and you were active and you got diagnosed with kidney cancer tomorrow and you passed away 3 months from now, you will get paid.
Yeah.
End of discussion. So I want to get that out there. And I also want to tell you this, Ed. I got, and here's kind of why I'm saying this. I got a solicitation from, I think it was like Union Privilege or Union Plus or something like that to get life insurance.
Right.
And so I always, you know, just kind of want to see what the competition is doing. And I filled it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was honest. And I said, look, you know, this is my medical history. Here's what I've had, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, great, you know, thank you for filling it out. We'll, you know, we'll send you your information about your policy. And yesterday I get a letter. It's kind of thick.
Like, thanks, thick, but no thanks.
Thick letters are not usually good. And yes, it was, you're denied. And I'm like, you got to be joking me. And so, but for this program, Ed, I would have no life insurance, literally.
Well, it's a good reason to check this one out if you're having trouble in other places.
Yeah, I think so.
NCLenrollment.com.
Yeah, NCLenrollment.com. You could do short-term disability from there and or the life insurance, right? So anyway, that's my little
PSA. That was a PSA, huh?
That's what's called a PSA. A little plug for our program, because it really is important. And it's important while you're raising your family, right? Mm-hmm. You got kids, you got a wife, you got a mortgage, you got a car. You know, that's the time you need life insurance.
Yeah.
Don't listen to these people that will tell you, like, oh my God, you're 75 years old, you need $1 million in life insurance. Because if you're in the building trades, you're an empty nester. The house is paid. You got a pension. You got an annuity. You got retiree health insurance. You don't need millions of dollars of life insurance. Does that make sense to you?
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my spiel. What else is going on?
You know what I saw this week that I thought was really awesome? You know, Ken, that I'm a very sort of like longtime passionate Metallica fan.
I certainly do.
You know, they have concerts and they always raise money and they make a big deal of showing these big checks at all the concerts. But something they've done that came out on the news like last week that I never knew about is that they give out grant scholarships for technical schools, trade schools, and like CDL programs.
Really?
I never knew anything about this, but it was on CBS, like the morning show on Sundays, and they had a lady who got a CDL, Metallica scholarship, got her CDL.
CDL meaning commercial driver's license.
Yeah, driving a truck. So she said for her first interview, her first job interview, she went to the company, told the guy that she got the Metallica scholarship, and he hired her on the spot. But she was driving a truck for their concerts. And so she went in and introduced herself.
Whoa.
And that's how this whole thing came to be. So, you know, I'm a big Metallica fan, even though they really only had four good albums in the last 30 years. Their music has been trash.
No.
But they're doing good for working people, and it was a nice angle to take, because they were just kind of like, yeah, people can't afford to go to college all the time,
and they're not out there like beating their chest on it.
I didn't know a thing about it. I mean, I follow Metallica, I read about Metallica, but
so it's for blue collar. It's like for like people that don't want to go to college, like trades and things like that.
Yeah, they just do it as like a grant thing. You can apply for it, and Metallica will give you a Metallica scholarship.
How cool would that be?
I want to get it. I'll go to school for anything just to be a Metallica scholar.
You're not a Rhodes scholar. You're a Metallica.
Right, that would be a lot more fitting. I think you were like a Motorhead scholar back when you were in
I was
law
a nothing
school.
Scholar, let's put it that way. I was a lucky to get into any school scholar.
You're just really good at taking tests, like the bar exam.
Well, you know, when in doubt, look about. That's not true. For the record, I did not cheat on the bar exam.
Well, you're not a lawyer anymore anyway, are you? Are you still a lawyer?
Yeah, I'm still a lawyer, but I put my license on hold, mostly so I didn't have to take those goofy continuing education classes.
I can imagine that.
Oh, my God. They're like watching paint dry.
Right.
You know, you just sit there like, you know, it's like, I'm paying attention. Like, you're playing on your phone or something. It was terrible. So yeah. I put it on hold. I think Bob Ryder did that. He's the one that kind of showed me how to do that.
That seems like a pretty good move.
I didn't really even like being a lawyer.
You can't be accused of malpractice if you're not actually a lawyer.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I would do it.
You know, people always call and they're like, you know, I am a lawyer, and I will tell you this. And like, well, can I say that anymore? I'm not sure about if I can even say that, but I say it anyway.
You should just keep saying that.
I'll say whatever I want to say.
Yeah.
You know that.
I do know that. I think most of our listeners know that as well.
I can run my mouth. All right. So today we have zero guests.
That's right.
Right? So just you and me.
We were going to have little Timmy come back, but little Timmy, I don't know if he made it. We just haven't been able to get in touch with him.
Well, he's still hopping back to...
on his one leg to the chicken factory.
Back to Iowa.
Yeah, very popular segment last week.
Yeah, you know what? I'll tell you what else was popular was the TikTok that our great crew here at WGN put on about my impassioned speech about Thanksgiving.
It was impassioned.
It was impassioned, and I got some comments from some people, because for the first time I like shared something on Facebook, which I never do, but it was a video of me, so of course I shared it.
Putting yourself out there. Yeah, I like it.
Ken 2028. And you know who responded?
Who's that?
Give a shout out to Dick Griffin.
Oh.
Right? Former General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board. Like, gave me, like, a thumbs up, like, hey, you know, keep up the good work, brother.
We've got friends in high places.
How cool was that?
That's very cool. Yeah, Dick Griffin is a superstar.
No kidding, right? I was stoked. So, anyway.
Check us out on TikTok, by the way. The Workers Mike.
I know. Ed is so proud of the fact that his TikTok has gotten, like, lots of views.
Lots as in, like, more than all of yours.
Okay.
For the last year, but not that I'm counting or keeping track.
Yeah, well, listen, you should do so well in the football pool. How about that?
I'm trying.
Yeah, not too hard, because guess who's ahead of you? Ed needs Viagra.
Oh, I'm going to have to talk to him about that.
I will tell you this. Ashley's coming up strong. She's only 10 points behind me, which is kind of killing me, because I know I'm going to choke.
Yeah.
And if I lose to Ashley...
She's the producer of the show. We had her on a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I know.
Everybody loves Ashley, except Ken right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. I just want her to lose. Anyway, listen, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and run our mouths about a whole bunch of stuff that you will find fascinating right here on 720 WGN, The Workers' Mic.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Phil talked about, on Worker Wednesday, the WNBA
right.
and their Players Association, and how they're in the contract negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the women who played for or play for the WNBA were making like $50,000 or $60,000, like driving for Uber, you know.
Oh, for sure.
And now all of a sudden,
and the max salary was like $300,000, which I think is what Caitlin Clark makes and a couple of others.
And now I think they're raising the minimum to like two and change, and like all of a sudden, like, you know, that they have a living wage,
right?
And it's becoming more popular, right? And I think you're right. Like you always say that the Caitlin Clark effect. Mm-hmm. So it got me thinking, and I know we've talked about this, but I am going to say this again. One of my goals next year, because remember, Ed, that when we had the I can't remember her name. I should. The head of the
National Women's Soccer League, yeah, Players mm-hmm, Union. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so she was on, and we asked her, you know, kind of a tough question, which is, if there was a picket in front of one of the stadiums, would you cross? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the answer, unfortunately, was, you know, our contract, I think, requires us to cross the picket line, right? So, you know, we started talking about it, and we talked offline a little bit as well, that there is, under the auspices of the AFL-CIO, there is a sports blank conference, whatever
committee
it is,
something.
Yeah, where it's like the players' associations for, you know, all the major sports leagues, mm-hmm. and I believe they all have these clauses. And here's what I want to say. I want to say this to those unions, because I'm literally going to come to Washington D.C. in 2026, and I'm going to ask to speak to them as a coalition. And here's my ask, and it's very simple. Get rid of the language in your contract that requires you to cross a picket line, right? So what do we have in the building trades, Ed? We have what's called legitimate picket line language.
Right.
That means we don't have to cross a picket line. If you're not in a union, by the way, and there's a picket line, you don't have to cross that picket line. You literally have a First Amendment right or National Labor Relations Act right not to cross the picket line. It's only when you waive that right.
Right.
Okay. And so my thought process is this: players, musicians, artists, you know, TV personalities, people that have gotten rich, really rich, because A, they're super talented, right? There's no question about that, right? They've worked very hard to get where they are.
Right.
But B, we, the people, made you rich. Right? Because we watch your movies, because we buy your products. Mm-hmm. Because when you decide that, you know, you're a famous actor and you need to, I don't know, open up a tequila company because you need that extra $1 billion,
yeah.
You know, we're buying that tequila because it's got your name on it. Which, by the way, just that makes me ill as well. Like, you know, let somebody else do that. How much money do you actually need?
Well, I think Dwayne Johnson needs more, is what he would say. More. The answer is always more. You make a very good point, though, Ken, because, as you said, federal law gives workers the right to choose not to cross a picket line.
Yeah.
So every single worker in America has that right.
Right.
If you're in a union whose contract does not give you that right,
yeah,
you gave it up.
Yes,
so
you gave it up. And why did you give it up?
Try to look back, see if you got something for it, or just see if it was like a friendly deal. But it's time to, if you didn't get something for it,
yeah,
you better get a lot for that.
And
you're giving up your own rights as a citizen.
And so I'm saying to these, I use the players as an example because, you know, we love Unite here, right?
We don't especially hate the players. We hate the game.
Good one. Well, I do hate the Cowboys, for the record. Okay.
Well, that's because you're an Eagles fan now?
No, I'm a Giants fan still, which has been a real disaster this year.
Yeah.
But, you know, the like I said, Unite here, right, the concession workers and, you know, the drivers and the beer delivery and all the people that make these games what it is, you know, and like watching the NFL is just fascinating, like how much stuff goes into this thing, from, you know, television people to like all the worker bees,
right,
that surround the 11 guys on a field at any given time,
mm-hmm.
right, on offense and defense. So I think you, the player, have an obligation to help those that got you to where you are today. And take, for example, if there was a concession strike, you know, why not make those concession workers, why not give them the ability to get a livable wage? They're trying really hard right now, right? Sometimes they strike, you know, so they picket, you know, they got a, you know, good, strong unions. But at the end of the day, if they went on strike, right, you know, robots are going to serve beer now and, you know, all this kind of nonsense. And so my thinking is that the players, because look, you're a player and you work really hard to get where you are. You went to college, you know, you went to high school and you played football in high school. And after your classes were done, you went and practiced.
Right.
Right. Because you had the opportunity to do so. But there's a kid in a concession stand right now that I bet is better than somebody on the NFL, but he never got the opportunity to go and play after school sports because he had to work.
You should go find that kid and be his agent.
I'm looking for him. Yeah. If you're listening out there, you know.
Yeah, if you think you could play in the NFL, call Ken Edwards, attorney at law.
But my point is this, that I know for a fact that there are young folks that did not have that same opportunity that you had. And you're going to say, I worked really hard to get it. And I know you did. But there are kids that wanted to work really hard to get it, but they couldn't because they're a single mom that needed the help. So they had to bag groceries after school, and they couldn't play sports, right? Yeah. Even though they wanted to. So now's your opportunity, I think, to give back to those people that have made you rich, have made you famous, have, you know, gotten all the gold chains that you have. You know, change that one thing in the contract. So if there's a picket or a strike or whatever, that you can, because you're the star, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's there to watch you. The point is that I literally think that there's just one slight change in all of the collective bargaining agreements can change the world for a ton of workers. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's my sort of pre-New Year's resolution.
I like it. And I mean, I always, we've talked about this. We've had Unite here on a few times,
yeah,
with different actions at the United Center. And, you know, if you're a person who is working to serve beers that cost $20 each for a beer, it's not like they're not serving a lot of them either. The lines at the concession stands are always long, so it's a busy job. They're generating a ton of income.
For sure.
Those people shouldn't be living in poverty.
Correct.
Yeah, they shouldn't have, like, other full-time jobs.
Once again, and look, you know, you're going to give a tax break to a player, or not a player, but an NFL team that's going to build a stadium here. And that's great, right? Build a stadium is good for construction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're all about it. But there shouldn't be anybody in that world that relies on public assistance. If you get tax breaks, there shouldn't be anybody in your world that has to rely on public assistance, whether it's an employee of yours or somebody that works in the stadium. And
yeah,
some of them do.
We've seen the amount of money that they're talking about that would be generated in, you know, revenue and taxes and all that kind of stuff and jobs if the Bears move to Arlington Heights. You read it in the paper all the time.
You mean when they move?
I think so. I mean, it certainly seems that way. But
yeah.
But there's all this money that's going to come as a result of that, right?
Right.
What does it come from? 9 home games.
Yeah, that's right.
It. So if you want to get an idea of how much money is generated by these athletes,
yeah,
that's how much. Like, 9 games can make a difference for an already pretty affluent town. So there's no reason that anybody should be living in poverty who works in there, you know?
Well, is it going to be a situation, Ed, where it's, I think it's like...
Charge $21 for the beer and give the dollar. All of a sudden, you know, they'll be doing all right.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you should say that. I always think, like, if everybody that drove through McDonald's, everybody gave an extra dollar to the workers and go, here, extra dollar. And they had 10,000 people drive through, you know, every week. So 10 grand for the staff.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I think McDonald's food is terrible. They should give me a dollar to buy some Pepto-Bismol.
That's horrible. Well, they're feeling the heat, too.
Get, like, a little single serving of Pepto with your meal. That's not a terrible idea.
See how...
You listening, Pepto-Bismol?
You see how expensive it's getting? I'll tell you...
Pepto? Seriously, I know.
Not Pepto, McDonald's. And they're having to lower their prices. And I'll tell you what else I read.
Regular sit-down restaurants cost the same as fast food now.
Crazy.
So people are,
it's
like,
crazy.
Wait,
yeah.
I don't want to eat in my car.
Or I can't afford it anymore. And I'll tell you what I read is the pizza effect. You know what's happening with pizzas right now? Pizza's, you know, a $1 trillion industry. Places are reporting that where they used to order a pizza, excuse me, with 3 toppings and a soda and wings and breadsticks or whatever. Now they're just ordering 1 plain cheese pizza, please.
Yeah.
Because they can't afford it.
This beautiful cheese pizza just for me.
But I'm serious. They can't afford, like, toppings. My point is that if people can't afford the mushroom and sausage on a pizza, you know, then maybe we got to rethink this. I mean, this is like, an economy's doing great. No, it's not.
We got to take a break.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back, and then we'll talk about some more cool stuff that's going on in the world. And even remind me about the Florida case, okay?
All right.
All right, here we go. We'll be right back with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Workers' Mic. More show to come. Sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people, just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Okay, Phil said on Wednesday, for a quick second, when he took a shot at you.
I didn't even have anything to do with this.
It's just funny. So there's an article that came out, right? This whole thing, no tax on tips,
right?
No tax on overtime, which, by the way, is not in effect. And who knows if it's ever actually going to happen.
I think Illinois might have blocked the no tax on tips, or was looking at blocking
it. Well, so they can get a regular living wage, right? And no tax on tips is just like an easy way to go, you know, look, they get a tax deduction. We should pay them less.
Well, it's like hour. instead of business owners paying their workers,
right.
It's let's taxpayers take an extra little bit of a burden
let the customer pay.
Yeah,
right?
It's nonsense.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy.
I'm waiting for this to trickle down. It's all going to trickle down someday.
Yeah. So there was an article in the New York Times, and it was about OnlyFans. And OnlyFans, which I just found out, I just researched it when I heard the word.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Yeah. Apparently, it's a site where people go on and they make content.
They do.
And it's not only, by the way, it's not only adult content, but I think it's predominantly adult content. And so the way they get paid is tips, you know, whatever. So I guess the administration said, oh, no, that's pornography, and we're not going to. Those tips are not included in this. And that got me to thinking, it's like, okay, then what about, you know, a casino, gambling, right? Is that a sin? What about an exotic dancer, right? What about where, you know, prostitution might be legal in Nevada or something like that?
Right.
Like what? All of a sudden, you know, like, hey, we're going to not tax your tips, or at least a piece of them anyway. By the way, it's very small.
Yeah.
But now we're going to tell you what industries you can work in order for us to not tax your tips. And I just thought that was, I don't know, kind of ridiculous. You know, what's the difference if somebody wants to be on OnlyFans and make content and people pay for that content and want to give a tip for it? So what?
If it was illegal, they couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
It's legal. They're working, you know.
It's completely legal.
We're not supposed to be the morality police.
Yeah,
especially
exactly.
This group.
That's a good point, Ed.
This is terrible. Stop doing that. We're not going to, you know, we don't condone these videos. Hey, shoot that guy hanging onto the raft. Look at this guy. He's floating on a refrigerator door. Shoot a rocket at him.
And get it from the Epstein Island. He's close to the Caribbean. They were just trying to get to Epstein's Island.
Something like that.
Yeah. Ridiculous. So, all right. Anyway, we got that. And then check this out, Ed.
Yep.
Florida. Right, not necessarily known for their pro worker viewpoints.
Certainly
not. So they passed a law, maybe I want to say a year or two ago, that attacked public employees. Right, because of course public employees have to be the enemy. It's ridiculous. I don't even see how corporations benefit from attacking public employees. I just don't know, but there must be some.
I think it's just misdirection. It's like, look over here.
Yeah.
Don't look at us.
Yeah, that's probably right. So what they did was they passed a law in Florida that said in order for union to remain certified, meaning the collective bargaining representative,
mm-hmm.
The unit has to have at least 60% of people paying dues. All right. So it's a right to work state.
Right.
It's public sector, which means Janus, which means that you don't have to pay dues anyway. It doesn't matter where you work.
Mm-hmm.
And so Florida just took it one step further and said, you know what? We're going to arbitrarily set that threshold at 60%. And if you don't have 60% dues payers, we're not going to recognize you. So these unions are getting undone and undone and undone. They lost 83,000 union members. And so the unions have decided, you know what? That's ridiculous. And they did. They caught them sleeping. Right? And you should have been organizing.
Oh, for sure.
From day one.
If you don't have 60% paying dues, you're not either your services. There's a couple of things. Your services might not be where they should be. State laws can sort of incentivize people to leave, and, you know, business groups like IPI will push people and inform them how to leave. But if you can't get 60%, in most cases, I'd say you got to find a way.
Yeah, you have to find a way, and you shouldn't be asleep at the wheel, and you have to be constantly, especially in a right-to-work state or in a public sector group, because of Janus, you have to constantly organize.
Remind people why they're there.
Why the union's important. Have union meetings. Offer, you know, like we do, Ed. I mean, you know, we were born out of Janus, members only benefits, right? Mm-hmm. Offer things that are value. And so, there's all of a sudden, like, so Titusville, Public Works, and Public Works near and dear to my heart. That's what I did forever at Local 150. They decided, you know what? We are going to go with a big union, and it's IBW. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start now to reorganize and, you know, bring some muscle in behind us. And so they are. And good. So that's what they're doing. And now we're starting to see that happening all over the state of Florida. And so, you know, all right, if 60% is a number, great. Then we're going to get 60% of people paying dues. First thing we need is an election. Right. And in order to get an election down there, much like every place else, 30% of card signed gets you an election. Now, you shouldn't go into an election with 30%. You got to go in with 80 or 90%
for of card signed. You'll always lose some.
Yeah, for sure, especially if they put on an anti-union campaign. And then after that, then you sign them up. Now, the question is, when does that take effect? Because in our world, we never charge dues until after the contract was signed. So what does that mean? Does that mean that they're going to say on day one, like, oh, you don't have 60% of dues payers? Well, there is no dues because there's no dues checkoff. There's no contract yet.
Right.
So I don't know what that means. And suppose you said, okay, guess what? We're going to have dues. We're going to have two sets of dues. One of them is going to be called dues. The other one is going to be called working dues.
Right.
Right? Does that sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
All right. That's what we have in the building trades. We have quarterly dues or monthly dues, and then we have what is called working dues.
Our this
quarterly
is dues, like a percentage of.
Yeah, right. So suppose you said Florida, and I'm giving you guys, here's my creative thinking. Suppose you said, yeah, we have dues. They're $1 a month, right? There's it. That's our dues.
Yeah.
And everybody pays $1 a month or $1 a year, whatever. Now you have 100%. And from there, you just go. Now they're going to challenge, like, well, those aren't really dues. Yeah, they are. Those are dues. So that's my thought.
The anti-union element, especially in a state like Florida, where you have a, you know, an attorney general and, you know, like a state judicial administration where they're not on your side. Like, they'll find a way to make this harder and make this harder. But
of course, but they
have as you said, I mean, you got to get people out of the sandbox, get people off like the regular plan.
That's right.
And
that's right. Just do something different, try different things, right?
And bringing in a large union, I mean, there's people who feel different ways about small unions like the Amazon folks in yes. Staten Island, for yes. example, versus, you know, big international unions.
Yes.
But one thing that international unions can bring to the table is resources, staff, experience, money, stuff like that. Yeah, they can if you go and say, like, hey, we've got a fight on our hands, we need resources, that's one way to do it.
Yeah, I'm just
not a bad idea.
Look, I think that and we're I don't know, I have lots of thoughts, and I think we'll start some of these thoughts next year after the holidays as to how to move the ball forward for labor. But you know, you have to start thinking about creative ways of getting, number one, just getting around these anti-worker laws, and number two, adding value to being in the union, number three, getting to that contract, right? And, you know, look, I'm saving a bunch of money right now by not going to Starbucks. They're on strike.
Right.
And I don't care if they're on strike in one location in the entire country, they're on strike, I'm not going to Starbucks.
They had 12 strikers were arrested in New York City earlier this week.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they were outside the headquarters in New York City.
What did they get arrested for?
I don't know what the charge was, but it was the day that Mom Donnie was down there and Bernie Sanders was down there with him. But yeah, they arrested 12 people. And oddly enough, I'm guessing Starbucks read the tea leaves and figured that their lawsuit in New York City about scheduling, they were breaking some of the city's ordinances about providing fair scheduling. They figured things were only going to get worse with Mom Donnie as mayor, so they settled to the tune of $35 million for, let me see, I forget how many workers it was. I think it was like 15,000 workers, but they're paying out $32 million for breaking the law, and then they have to pay $4 million in civil penalties to the city.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Good. And look, you know what?
You're breaking the law.
You know that's nothing to Starbucks, right? That's just
half of my monthly bill.
It's the cost of doing business, but at least that they're starting to get hit. You know, I saw Amazon
got hit
for $2.7 million for something or other. They settled, so they didn't admit liability, but they got hit, right? And it's a 1/10 of 1 cent for you and I. but at least they're starting to get hit. So maybe, you know, maybe some of the stuff is starting to work. I give credit to these Starbucks workers that, you know, have to take on this giant corporation, and they're starting finally to think creatively, you know, going to the like I said, going to the facilities that the distribution
centers,
right, and getting
now going to the headquarters,
going to headquarters, you know,
making they're still out there. You know, I'm happy to see it, because the previous things that they had done were 1 day or 3 day actions, and
it's spreading.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there are like 1,200 stores affected now. And look, it's not going to make or break the 9,000, but it's, you know, it's going to get close.
Right?
Was it 90,000? How many stores are there?
I'm not sure. I think it's 9,000.
Whatever it is,
it's a lot. But there were about 500 that were unionized. They've closed about 100 of those, I think.
Yeah.
So there's just over 400 right now that are still fighting for a contract.
Listen, and we wish them well.
Indeed, we do.
But yeah, it's time for labor to start doing some things that are outside of the box. And, you know, as we get into the new year, we're going to start to, I think, you know, maybe get some people on that are obviously smarter than us, and talk about, you know, how can we think outside the box? How can we? Because look, labor organizing, Ed, is really tough.
Yeah.
And if we continue to organize the way we've always organized, we're going to continue to lose numbers. There has to be better ways to do it. So we're going to start to explore some of that next year. But I think, you know, just be creative. Just do cool stuff. Charge a dollar of dues, Florida, and go, there you go. We got 100% dues payers. We're in. Right? Stuff like that.
Have you ever heard of a company called Dave's Killer Bread?
Yes, certainly have.
So this is a bread, like a bread brand that has a picture of a guy playing a guitar on the front of it. You find it, you know, it used to be like a Whole Foods thing. It was super expensive.
Yep.
They're based out of Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Left-leaning Portland, Oregon, I think.
Oh yes.
And what they've started to do, there's been talk about a union at Dave's Killer Bread, so they've started to take employees in and put them in conference rooms with like four or five other employees, and they're all from different departments, so they don't know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, they're saying that they think that they're bringing in people who don't actually work for the company. It's just an intimidation tactic to say, like, all right, you four or five people, what do you think about this union thing going on? And if you are sitting in a room being asked that question by management and you don't know anybody that you're sitting there with, you're like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything about this. But so this is what they're trying to do at sort of like a $10 a loaf bread company from Portland, Oregon.
Well, that's the last time I buy Dave's Killer Bread.
Dave's not that. It's Dave's Worker Killing Bread. You know, you're not getting any more.
Once again, it's one of these, like, you know, Trader Joe's, like, oh, look how liberal we are when it comes down to it. Yeah. Right.
We're just a good old family company.
Bus like anybody else. Well, that's you know what? Shame on them.
Shame on them.
Right? Bad employer of the week. Dave's
union, Dave's killer Dave's bread.
Worker killer bread.
Yeah.
Horrible. All right. Listen, we'll take a quick break. Come back. I'm going to wrap it up with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Ed Maher here with Ken Edwards. And, we're about to wrap up the show in a little bit. Just wanted to cover a couple more things. The government was shut down, as we all know.
Yes.
And largely it was done to try to get these ACA, Obamacare subsidies renewed so that people's health care wouldn't go through the roof.
Yep.
Right now, like, groups like Politico, Wall Street Journal, like all these different organizations that have political, you know, reporters day in, day out, they're saying it looks like it's not going to get done, which means at the end of the year, people who get their health care on the exchanges might see their premiums double, triple, quadruple, or more, you know, and what is already kind of unaffordable health care will become, you will have no money for anything but healthcare.
Right.
If you really step back and think about it, if you get your insurance through, you know, a subsidized exchange program and you're like, all right, it costs me $200 a month or $400 a month or whatever, and you think that's what it costs, and then all of a sudden the subsidies go away and it's $1,000 or $2,000 or more every month, people don't really know what healthcare costs in the exchanges. And because of the subsidies. So if these government subsidies have sort of allowed costs to go so wild behind the scenes without the users really knowing that the costs are going up, I mean, are we just rushing to a place where if the government's trying to get people off of government-paid healthcare, Are they going to at some point get rid of these subsidies and then no one will be able to afford insurance? Is the government just going to have to pick up insurance for everybody? I mean, insurance being unaffordable and unobtainable for everyone, what does that result in? It puts everybody on Medicaid, which this administration at least has tried to get everybody off of.
Right.
But the reality is American people need to have access to healthcare. So if that number of people who can afford it is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, and the system is clearly more and more broken, and this has really shined a light to show how much more broken it is than we thought, mm-hmm. are we sort of speeding toward like a single-payer system?
Listen, if that's what it takes to get to one, great. I hope it happens. I think, unfortunately, the opposite's going to happen. I think they're just going to say, oh, you can't afford it? Sorry, you have no health insurance. And then what's going to do for the people that have it, it's going to make ours unaffordable as well, and then we're not going to have it either. So the entire thing is going to implode upon itself. If you're a healthcare company or a Blue Cross Blue Shield or one of those big mega companies, and if you don't see the writing on the wall that nobody's going to have health insurance anymore, meaning you're going to go out of business, then you should be lobbying right now very hard to go extend the subsidies or let's do single payer. You know, I think Trump floated something out, which was like, we're just going to give everybody $50,000 and you guys can pay for your own doctor's visits and stuff like that.
It's going to be called Trump Care. Give everyone a health savings account.
By the way, they've had 16 years to figure it out and they haven't been able to. So it's like extend the subsidies or do something about it or go to single payer. But let's put it this way. You got 3 weeks.
And,
right?
And yeah, I mean, things are, this is just not working the way we do this.
No, it's not working. It's not working at all.
The amount of people that are in medical debt or go into bankruptcy because of medical debt, I don't think it's outrageous to say that you shouldn't be poor because you get sick.
I know. No kidding.
If anybody's got a kid under the age of, say, 10, ask them if that makes sense. You won't find a kid who thinks, well, you know, you should pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Well, like you said, and you've talked about this in the past, like all these hospital networks are going to go under because they can't afford to not get paid.
Right.
Right? So you have to take a patient, right? You know, the Hippocratic Oath, et cetera, et cetera. But you're not going to get paid. And so therefore, what's going to happen, like we've seen a couple of health centers networks like the one out in Utica and stuff like that, they go under because they don't have any money. And so what's that going to do is going to leave these deserts of healthcare, and it's going to leave workers in big, big trouble. Another reason to join a union so you can negotiate for health insurance, so you can negotiate for doctor's offices.
We are known for having good healthcare.
Yeah, we are. But, you know, if the entire country goes down, I think we go down with it.
There's no question.
Right?
Yeah, because otherwise you either pay for everyone else or you go down with the ship.
Yeah, it's rough. So, we'll, obviously, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I would hope that the smart ones get together. Check this out. You know Bob Bruno? He's a professor at University of Illinois.
I know Bob well.
Yeah, he's a
friend of the show.
Yep, friend of the show, super smart guy. So he has, I don't know what you call it, like a blog.
And Substack.
It's on Substack. But if you get a chance, look up his latest post, and it's about Luddites. I always thought a Luddite was somebody that was anti-technology.
Okay.
And it turns out that that's not accurate. They actually stem from, there was some textile stuff going on in the early 1800s in England, and these massive workers stormed these textile locations because they said, we want to work, but the textile companies were introducing things like the sewing machine. You know, and stuff that was going to put them out of work. So I guess Luddite was named after like Ned Ludd, like a guy.
It's a rough name.
Yeah, it's a tough name. So they're not anti-progress. And you know, he dives into how technology has generally increased productivity and actually increased job opportunities and the way of life and the Industrial Revolution, blah, 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 blah. And then at the very end, he says, except AI. And we're starting to read now. I dug a little deeper, and they're like, yeah, AI is not that.
So I read something just yesterday, and I forget what group this was that did a project with computer programmers using like Anthropic and these code-centric AI platforms where they gave like 100 programmers, 50 had to use AI to do it, 50 had to do it on their own. All of them agreed that the people who used AI would get it done faster.
Yeah.
And in the end, it wasn't true. The people who did it on their own got it done faster.
Interesting.
So I've seen a couple things more and more like this, and I'm starting to like allow myself to think that maybe this might wind up being something that like is a tool for workers in some cases, but I mean, I think there are a lot of folks that will have their sort of entry into the working world cut off completely.
They're saying, here to all your lawyers out there, the billable hour is going to go away because for years, you know, you would bill for, you know, I'm going to read this 45-page brief and then I'm going to, you know, make a synopsis of it and give it to the partner and blah, blah, blah. And now they're saying, hey, I can do that in about less than 30 seconds.
For sure.
So, like, the billable hour has to go away and now it's going to become back to, like, outcome-driven. So if you get a chance, just Google Bob Bruno Substack and read this article about Luddites. It's really, really fascinating. It's historical. Like, you like the history stuff, right?
I do.
Yeah, so I thought it was cool. All right, so I think next week we have some cool guests about some radio, like a labor radio network.
Yeah, National Labor Radio folks.
Really, really cool.
Yeah.
Who knew this was out there?
We're joining up and we're going to start putting our heads together. So look out, world.
Hell yeah. All right.
Look out, anti-radio, anti-labor radio networks.
Look out, FM.
We're coming for
you. Here comes AM.
AM is coming
up from behind. All right, listen, we will be back next week with more of The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Worker's Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of The Worker's Mic, visit WGNradio.com.